Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Face Connecticut on WTIC News Talk 1080, 96.5 TICFM and Light 100.5 WRCH. Aaron Kupek with you this Sunday morning, and we are pleased to be joined by John Erlinghauser. He is Advocacy and Outreach Director for AARP Connecticut. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Aaron. It's good to be with you again.
Well, John, let's start with COVID-19 and the vaccine rollout. People 65 and older, officially last Thursday, could start making appointments. What are you hearing from people who are trying to get vaccinated?
First of all, I'd like to say, you know, thank the governor and the task force for hearing our call to vaccinate, you know, and extend 1B to the age 65 and older population. So that's a good thing. And, you know, we're hearing, you know, some positive things out of this. Last Thursday was the first day that those 65 and older can register for the vaccine. And, you know, it's going fairly well. The numbers are fairly well in the state of Connecticut for those getting vaccinated. But a lot more work has to be done. A lot of towns are not even at the 50% mark in terms of those 75 and older who have been vaccinated. So, you know, AARP is doing a lot of work to reach out to our membership and to the public in general to encourage folks to register for the vaccine and get vaccinated. So, you know, it's the only way we're going to get through this pandemic. On the nursing home front with vaccines, you know, we're very pleased that nursing home deaths have come down tremendously, and that's because we've been successful in the state of Connecticut at getting, you know, the nursing home population vaccinated. That's where a lot of the deaths in from COVID have occurred. So, you know, that's a good sign, but a lot more work has to be done, and, you know, folks have to really get out there and understand that this is important for everybody, that they get vaccinated.
What are some of the common hurdles you've heard of about getting that COVID-19 vaccine appointment? I know there were some call center issues initially. The state recently staffed up that contact center. Have things gotten better?
Yeah, things are starting to get better, and that was an issue initially. In fact, a lot of the calls that AARP received early on with the vaccine rollout revolved around two areas, and those were that, you know, why weren't people in that 65 and older group being allowed to get vaccinated in that first wave? And then the other was that because they were doing the 75 and older group, a lot of that population doesn't have a computer or have the ability to access a computer, particularly with senior centers and other places closed. So they were left to call the call center. The administration did heed the call on that and bumped up the call center. So that is starting to go a lot better. And, you know, Aaron, I want to just point out for folks, AARP, for those that have the ability to get on a computer, has created a Connecticut-specific website for the vaccine. And that is at www.aarp.org/CT vaccine. And you can go onto that website, and it has all the information about Connecticut's rollout and how you register the vaccine, what the differences between the vaccines, between Pfizer and Moderna, for example, and has the 800 number for the vaccine, and you know, a link to the page to register. So a lot of good information about being vaccinated, Connecticut's rollout plan, and you know everything you would need to know about the vaccine. So I would encourage people to go to that website.
Are you hearing from seniors that they're eager to get vaccinated, or do they still have some reservations?
Most of the calls that we've received have been from people eager to get vaccinated. You know, I think it's been very hard for folks, you know, older folks who have grandchildren that they haven't been able to see. You know, we're all doing this remote thing, and that's a good thing that we have technology in this day and age. But, you know, they're feeling disconnected from one another. It's made it easier to try to get people to see their loved ones in the nursing homes, you know. So, yeah, you know, the older population is pretty much more interested in getting vaccine than a lot of other populations. And I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, the successful history they see, that older population, with vaccines going all the way. I know in my household, growing up, my mother used to, you know, canonize Dr. Salk with the polio vaccine, you know, because they grew up with that, you know. So there is a real desire for that population to get vaccinated. And I think it's really at this point about getting them the right information, getting them the access to be able to get the vaccine, and the state of Connecticut getting the vaccines that are needed in order to get people not only their first shot, but their second shot, because both of the vaccines that are available here in Connecticut right now, Pfizer and Moderna, you know, require that second shot after about 3 weeks. So I think it's critical. I think people have to pay attention. And I really would encourage folks to get registered for a vaccine and get the vaccine.
With that second shot, has there been some confusion about the whole scheduling thing? I've heard some clinics schedule you for that second shot when you get your first one, and others say, oh, wait, and then, you know, contact us or go online to see when you can get that second appointment.
Most of the mass vaccination sites are scheduling folks for the vaccine when you get the first vaccine. So, you know, there are some issues in some of the other locations, but we haven't heard a lot about that. There is a little bit about that, but I think that's getting cleared up.
How does Connecticut compare in the rollout when you look at other states? I heard an interview recently with one of your AARP colleagues down in Florida, and she was discussing some of the issues they've had down there with vaccine tourism and things really slow to get started. Is Connecticut a leader when it comes to getting shots in arms?
Well, yeah, I mean, in the you know, first initial vaccine, you know, we're right up in the top three, and you know, we're in the top 10 when it comes to the second vaccine. So we have some work to do there, but I do have to say that you know, we would hope that we can get more people into this phase 1A. You know, our membership is 50 and older, and we think it should be 50 and older, frankly. But Connecticut is doing a good job not only with vaccination, but with how we've been able to heed the public health officials' advice and keep infection rates down and everything else. So we're in pretty good shape here in Connecticut.
You mentioned the vaccine rollout.
Could get better, though.
It can always be better.
Sure.
You mentioned the vaccine rollout in nursing homes and the tremendous loss of death there was in Connecticut long-term care facilities early on in the pandemic. What's the situation on the ground now? What are you hearing?
Well, I mean, you know, there are a lot of issues with the nursing homes. You know, we're looking here in Connecticut, for example, about 14,000 residents of nursing homes have been affected with COVID-19, and there have been about 4,000 deaths attributable to residents of nursing homes. So it's been an issue, but what COVID has done is really exposed a lot of the, you know, kind of longstanding problems that have existed in nursing homes. A lot of nursing homes have just never had adequate staffing levels. The staff often make low wages. Some facilities have like three or four people living in a single room, which helped contribute to the problem with the infection rates in nursing homes. You know, so and some of the places have had lapses in infection control going back way before the COVID. So there have been a lot of issues. And like many areas that we'll probably discuss today, COVID has really exposed structural problems that existed before. So having said that, you know, we're very pleased that the governor, for example, finally has lifted the civil immunity restriction that has been in place, and it'll be lifted as of March 1st. And we applaud the governor for taking that step. Nursing homes have kind of pushed back throughout this pandemic saying, oh, you know, they're doing the right thing. A lot of nursing homes have done the right thing. There's still some bad actors out there. And if they haven't, since this pandemic began almost a year ago, cleaned up their act, then, you know, they shouldn't continue to be shielded behind the protection of civil immunity. You know, and what's interesting about that is, you know, nobody's advocating for there to be hundreds and hundreds of lawsuits against skilled care facilities. But there has to be at least some you know, pressure put on nursing homes that are not doing the right thing. Many, many, many of them are, and we applaud those that are. But for those that aren't, there has to be improvement or there have to be consequences. And so we applaud the governor for doing the right thing there.
Has the pandemic exposed some issues related to nursing homes that you feel should be addressed legislatively? The session is underway. We heard from the governor last week in his budget address. What is AARP advocating for in terms of long-term care facilities?
Well, you know, we have to increase staffing levels in these nursing homes and increase the wage levels. And there are, will be legislation to do both of those things. Patient staff ratios have to come down. So there are lots of things that can be done. One of the other issues that's a big one is you know, we think there should be the ability to have cameras in rooms. It just only makes sense. And the pandemic kind of exposed what we had been saying about having cameras in rooms for several years. You know, all of a sudden, when the pandemic hit, people were shut off from their loved ones and people were dying, never having the ability to see their loved ones again, dying alone with strangers. And that's not right. And if we had the ability to have, you know, cameras in rooms, you would be able to have that connection with your loved ones. So, you know, that's a big issue. And so we're pushing very hard on those areas legislatively. And there will be legislation on those. And to some degree, there is already. So we're hopeful that, with the lens of the pandemic exposing some of these issues, we'll get those things done.
Funding for nursing homes has been boosted by the state during the pandemic. Is that something you feel should stick around after things begin to get back to normal?
Well, you know, if it depends on, you know, here's the thing. It depends on what the funding is being used for, right? I mean, so if funding is going towards direct care, yes. If it's going to solve structural deficiencies that have existed prior to the pandemic, then no. You know, so that's where we would stand on that issue.
You are listening to Face Connecticut. We are talking to John Erlinghauser. He is Advocacy and Outreach Director for AARP Connecticut. One more nursing home question. What is the status of visitation right now? I know the rules can vary from facility to facility, but during the height of the pandemic, we, you know, saw people doing visits through outdoor windows. Has the situation changed since we saw those images?
You know, to some degree it has. It's starting to get better, but you know, the fact is, you know, not all the staff in nursing homes are vaccinated, you know, so it depends on the facility. And, you know, we're hoping that we get to a place. The governor certainly thinks we can get to a place where we can get back to having in-person visitations in many of these homes. We're hopeful for that. You're right. I mean, one of the issues, I mentioned cameras before, you know, one of the issues that's been problematic in that arena is, you know, kind of the digital divide that exists as it relates to high-speed internet and broadband service, right? I mean, some of these facilities are in areas where it's not even accessible. So there are lots of problems and lots of issues that have to be dealt with. We're hopeful that it'll get better. We think we're on the path to get better, but it goes back to the first things we talked about, getting vaccinated as soon as you can get vaccinated within the schedule set forth by Connecticut, and heeding the public health warnings by wearing masks and washing hands and keeping social distancing. Eventually we'll get back to normal.
That's a perfect segue to talking about the digital divide and telecommunications in the larger sense. What needs to be done to extend high-speed internet to areas of Connecticut that don't have it, where, you know, a lot of folks are older and have trouble connecting?
Yeah, I mean, it's a big issue. It's not only for the, you know, important for the visitation for folks in nursing homes, but it's also important for, you know, people like myself that are working from home now because of the pandemic. It's important because of telehealth. Telehealth became a huge tool that was able to be used during the pandemic. Remote learning and education, right? I mean, you have places like the city of New Britain that is virtually non-connected for many folks. So it's a big thing, a big important thing. The governor has made it a priority of his legislative agenda in 2021. We're encouraged by the approach that he's taking. We're kind of still reviewing his total proposal. It just came out last Wednesday, and we're encouraged by it, and we're certainly going to work towards making sure that high-speed internet and broadband is available to folks. Big problem, not only in the rural areas, but, you know, you go up to, you know, that Torrington, Litchfield area, huge problem, because, you know, there's not a lot of money to be made by these companies because there's so few people in those rural areas. And it's the same problem with within some of the inner cities, because it's not profitable for them to build out in an area where they're not going to make a lot of money. But it puts everybody at a disadvantage. And, you know, a pandemic has always exposed that. We've said that for many years at AARP, and we made it a priority long before the pandemic, that we really have to get people connected. Those in the rural areas, though, in low income communities. And we think the governor's approach is kind of headed in the right direction. So we're encouraged by that. And we're going to continue to work to make sure that people have that access, as I said, for visitation rights, keeping you connected to your loved ones, whether they're in nursing homes or not, keeping you connected to have the ability to work remotely if you want or need to, and allowing for folks to be able to learn remotely. It's not fair that somebody in a wealthy community's child can be safe at home and remote learn, but somebody in inner city can't. So it's an important issue. Well, as I said, we're encouraged and we're hopeful we'll get somewhere finally here in Connecticut on that issue.
We've talked about this issue before. Landline telephone service, especially important to seniors. And since we last spoke, roughly a year ago, things have changed. Connecticut's main landline provider has filed for bankruptcy and is now trying to emerge from that bankruptcy. What's the latest when it comes to Frontier?
The final decision on bankruptcy just came out a few days ago, and we're encouraged. AARP submitted several sets of comments on their bankruptcy. They've guaranteed to remain in Connecticut, keep their headquarters in Connecticut, maintain staffing levels for several years, and have also committed to build out their high-speed internet in areas where they currently aren't built out. And there are many other protections for consumers that are built into it. And those landline protections exist. And we're going to continue to fight for that, particularly for those, as you say, that are not in a position to be able to afford high-speed internet because they can't, you know, they may have it where they're located, but they just can't afford it, or they just may not have it. And that only guarantee currently under the law that folks have is that old-fashioned landline. And it's a lifeline for many folks. So we're going to continue to fight that fight. We're encouraged by the PURA decision, the regulator's decision on the bankruptcy petition of Frontier in Connecticut. And we're going to continue to move forward and protect that because it's an essential tool for those, particularly seniors and low-income individuals.
What were other issues that the governor covered in his budget package that were of particular interest to AARP?
Well, you know, as I say, we're very pleased with the high-speed internet proposal. We're also very encouraged that, the governor's going to try to make it easier for those who have, let's say, a healthcare license in one state to be able to move to Connecticut and find work because, you know, our population's aging and workforce numbers, particularly around healthcare professionals, are dwindling. So, you know, a lot of states have these interstate compacts when it comes to licensure. We don't have that in Connecticut, so we're encouraged by his efforts to do that. We're one of only 8 states that isn't in a compact that makes licenses reciprocal. And, you know, so there are things that we're pleased with. One of the things we're very concerned with is the asset test that he has again proposed on the Medicare Savings Program. And this is the program that helps low and moderate income individuals pay for, seniors pay for prescription drugs and healthcare premiums. And, people have to understand the history of that program. That before we had the Medicare Savings Program as it's constructed in Connecticut, we had a prescription drug program called CompACE. And the Connecticut state budget picked up the full cost of prescription drugs for those who are income eligible for that program. We worked with the legislature and previous administrations to create the current Medicare Savings Program that maximizes benefits, meaning folks get more benefits than they were getting under the old CompACE program, the old prescription drug program, and it was costing the state of Connecticut less money. So that was the deal. And now they're going to change the rules of the deal. And, there's this notion, this phony notion that there are wealthy people getting benefits from the state of Connecticut and the federal government to pay for prescription drugs. And it's just not true. We're a high-cost state. And there is a need. And, you know, the deal was we're going to save you money and increase benefit levels. And now they want to change the name of the game again. And that's just not fair. So we've been down this road before. We're going to do everything we can to make sure that proposal doesn't go anywhere. That was one of the big things that we were disappointed in. The other areas, you know, we were pleased with.
Talk to me about voting access. You have a proposal that would allow people to vote by mail, not just in a pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, so there are a couple of things that we'd like to see done. I'm a former registrar of voters. I did it for 16 years in the city of Ansonia. I know how the process works. We, in the state of Connecticut, during the August primaries and November elections, through executive order for the primary and legislation that was time limited for the general election, allowed there to be no excuse absentee balloting. We're one of the few states that in the Constitution, it restricts who can get an absentee ballot in the state of Connecticut. Because of COVID, we were able to get around that. It survived legal challenges. And I think over 400,000 people voted by absentee ballot, record numbers. And our members and those that accessed it loved it. It was a great thing. The problem is, in order to make that permanent, we have to change the Constitution. So there is going to be legislation to have a constitutional change to make that permanent, which means in 2022, if we pass it with a supermajority, we can get that on the 2022 ballot. And if approved, then the legislature can enact legislation to have that no excuse absentee balloting. So if not, it would have to happen two legislative sessions. It could pass by simple majority. But then that would mean the earliest it could get on the ballot would be 2024, because it has to be on a statewide election ballot. There is also another proposal, which is to allow for in-person early voting, which is a totally different thing. It would be voting the same way you would on election day at a precinct, but at a limited number of in-person voting sites. And that passed in 2019 by a big margin, but not a supermajority. So that has to be voted on again as well this year. But that proposal could pass with a simple majority and end up on the ballot in 2022. So there is a good possibility we'll have to take these things in two steps. It's highly likely that the in-person early voting would be on the ballot in 2022, and then the legislature would pass laws to enact that provision, because the Constitution also states that in Connecticut, the only day for voting is the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November. So that's why we need a constitutional change on both of these things. So it's likely the in-person early voting provision, if and when passed, will be on the 2022 ballot. And if we can get a supermajority, we can get the no excuse absentee ballot on the 2022 ballot. If not, we'll have to go back next year and then get it on the 2024 ballot. So we're hopeful. By the way, there are also other things that can be changed statutorily that were very popular during the presidential election, like, for example, the ballot drop boxes that were at town halls and secure locations all over the state of Connecticut. Our folks loved using those drop boxes. Those were paid for with federal dollars from the CARES Act. They can't be used again without legislative change, because, as I say, all those things were limited to just the 2020 elections. So there'll be legislation to change the law around things like that as well. So we're hopeful and we're encouraged.
He is John Erlinghauser, Advocacy and Outreach Director for AARP Connecticut. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Aaron. It's always a pleasure to be with you, and I hope you stay safe and we get through this thing relatively quickly.
Same to you. Thanks for listening to Face Connecticut. I'm Aaron Kupek. Enjoy the balance of your weekend.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.